You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent News, your trusted source for seafood prices, news, and data. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione.
Welcome back from vacay. Tell me about all the seafood you ate.
Oh, my sister-in-law went all out for the 4th of July and had it catered by Shore Fresh from Point Pleasant, New Jersey. So we had Blue Point oysters, we had little neck clams, we had shrimp cocktail. And then for dinner, everyone got their own lobster and crab cake. And just as I was diving into my lobster, my son almost lost his finger in a hoverboard accident. So I had to ditch my plate and go full medic.
But what?
He's fine now. So I need to redo my lobster dinner.
Well, I'm glad everyone's okay. And I'm glad you're back because I waited to talk about the tariffs.
Oh, Amanda, I didn't go through all that effort of planning my vacation around Trump's deadline.
I knew it. Well, last week I had a handful of Undercurrent friends join me. And this week we've got a whole new crew on to talk about the big headlines of the week.
So Undercurrent News editorial director Cliff White had the same brilliant idea as me to schedule vacation time around Trump's tariff deadline. But sorry, Cliff, there's no avoiding talking about tariffs. Thanks, Amanda. And this week, the big news is that Trump has agreed to a deal with Indonesia.
Trump called it a great deal. Cliff, is this a great deal for anyone in the seafood industry?
A great deal. It's a great deal for U.S. exporters that don't face any tariffs going into Indonesia. It's good news for Ecuadorian shrimp exporters who now are locked in at a lower rate than one of their primary competitors, Ecuador being the second largest shrimp exporter to the U.S. behind India, which, by the way, is going to have its own deal announced soon, allegedly.
I hope you know that you just sealed our fate for a breaker this afternoon. So thank you, Cliff.
But Indonesia is the third largest shrimp exporter, and it now faces a 9% differential between Ecuadorian tariffs. So they have an uphill battle now they're going to face. Of course, Indonesia is a huge seafood exporter to the U.S. It sent nearly $2 billion worth of seafood in 2024, shrimp being a huge portion of that, but also blue swimming crab and tuna and a bunch of other species. But all that will now face a 19% tariff going into the U.S. There's crazy tariff news every day. 19%, some people are calling it a better than expected outcome for Indonesia. I don't think anyone in Indonesia wants a 19% tariff. I don't think anyone in the world wants a tariff in the US, but this seems to be the new reality that every country is facing. No one's getting a free ride into the US anymore. Everyone is going to be paying some level of tariffs. Now it's about what kind of deal you can get. Trump has unilaterally named these new rates for a bunch of different countries. For Indonesia, they were threatened with a 32% rate. So 19% looks pretty good compared to that number. But compared to what it was a year ago, it's much worse.
I mean, right now, Sri Lanka budding seafood sector faces threat of 30% UF tariff. We have all the stories keep coming in on the blog. So by the time we get the podcast out tomorrow, I'm sure we'll have some sort of update that just shadows the whole Indonesia news from this week.
Yeah, through August 1st, we're going to get a lot more clarity on where these final rates are going to end up for a lot of countries. And then we'll be able to really do an analysis of winners and losers. As this process is still rolling out, it's a jump ball still on where this all shakes out. But yeah, India is pushing for a lower rate than Indonesia. Vietnam said it was going to get a lower rate than Thailand. Everyone wants to be better than their main competitors. But the macro level question that we really need to see how it shakes out is ultimately tariffs are going to create higher prices for U.S. buyers of seafood. Most seafood consumed in the U.S. is imported. So the question is, do Americans continue to buy seafood even if it's at higher prices? Or do they shift to eating more chicken or tofu or other proteins that will ultimately hurt everyone's seafood sales no matter what their tariff rate is? That's the big question.
We'll have to be watching retail numbers coming in for the next few months. June data we just recently reported from 210 Analytics with Anne-Marie Rohrink. Sales dollars were up because everything's up, but sales volume is down. So are people already taking that hit?
I can tell you we're looking into it, but I can also say that we're in the midst of a seismic change in how U.S. trade and the U.S. economy is being handled. The U.S. president is making an unprecedented push for lower interest rates. At the same time, inflation is starting to rise again because of these tariffs. So we're getting higher inflation rates while the president is pushing potentially to fire the head of the US Federal Reserve. And because he doesn't like his interest rate policy, he wants lower interest rates. So with lower interest rates and higher inflation, you could potentially have runaway inflation, which could throw the US seafood market and the US economy and the global economy into a totally different era than we've seen before, since maybe the 1970s or never. So it's really interesting from a journalistic perspective. From giving you answers, I don't quite have them yet, but we're starting to get a better idea of what the picture is going to look like over the next 6 months to a year.
Exactly. And if you are listening to this podcast and you do not subscribe to Undercurrent News, what are you waiting for? Because, what Cliff just described, we've got access to all this important data that will just help you. So check that out in the show notes. Thanks, Cliff. For all our sanity, we're going to end the tariff talks here for this week
because we've got even crazier things to talk about, like an update on our favorite Russian espionage drama that has been going on since May.
That's right. Jumping on the pod with us now is Undercurrent Editor-in-Chief Tom Seaman to talk about how Denmark's Espersen has stopped buying from European Commission-sanctioned Russian companies Nuriba Holding and Merman Seafood.
Yeah, great to be on the pod again. It's been a few weeks and always fun to talk about this very interesting evolving story, which has a couple of elements to it this week. One of which is the story which you mentioned there with Espersen stopping purchasing from Nuriba. And on one hand, you might say this is kind of obvious because Espersen's a European company. But of course, they can't carry on buying from Nuriba because the EU has sanctioned Nuriba and Merman. However, Espersen's got a plant in Vietnam, and they did have a plant in the UK, although that plant is, they still do have a plant in the UK, but they're actually kind of pulling out of that operation, but they still currently own it. And the UK has not sanctioned these two companies, so they could technically import product into the UK still. They could also import product to Vietnam, and then they could process it in Vietnam. They could, for example, send haddock from these two companies to the US market because haddock is not blocked by the US, whereas Russian cod is. So there are ways they could continue to use these products. They've basically come out and said, as far as they, it should be a zero tolerance approach, and they've stopped purchasing from these companies who, were long running supply partners of them. There's no secret that Nuriba and Merman would have been supplying Espersen in big volumes in the past, up until May the 20th. So it's an interesting position to take. I guess they supply, blue chip customers, and they need to take this kind of zero tolerance approach because they couldn't be seen to be even supplying these customers in from these companies in markets where they can, like the UK, or other markets, or processing in Vietnam, which is obviously outside of the EU, so they can buy from that plant they have there. But of course, there is this kind of subtext to this where, because of the nature of these frozen supply chains, everything takes quite a long time to happen. So the sanctions came into place on May the 20th. So if Espersen had purchased raw material from these companies before May the 20th, that raw material can still flow into their system and it can still be processed. And also, I think the understanding of the raw material going to Asia, being processed and then coming back to Europe is a bit clearer now. It seems like, although the EU has not really clarified it, it seems like if the processing company in China or Vietnam, if they paid for the raw material from Merman or Nuribo before May the 20th, then that product can then be processed in Asia and come to Europe because the payment, it's all about the sanction. The sanction is on payments. It's European companies are not allowed to pay these companies. They can, if they could take fish from them, but they just can't pay for it and the Russians can't receive payment. But if the payment happened before May the 20th, and then that product is kind of in the supply chain, it seems like that product could come to Europe still. And the sources of mine close to Espersen said that the companies will be kind of demanding that any processing partner they're buying from provides an evidence that the raw material was paid for before May the 20th, because then that can be used, in customs discussions if it does come to this. But the whole thing is extremely complicated, confusing, and the European Commission has not really helped it by not really clarifying, how these sanctions they're put in place are going to be applied. But I think the industry is kind of working it out a little bit. But then, in addition to this, obviously Norway has then subsequently sanctioned these two companies, which is quite significant because these companies land their vessels. Obviously, Norway and Russia share a border top. They manage the Barents Sea fishery together. They set the quota together. Russian vessels land in Norwegian ports and offload their cargo. And then that cargo is then maybe sent to the Netherlands and then sent to China or distributed to other channels in Europe. So that can't happen anymore. These vessels can't land in Norway, and they can't also fish in Norwegian waters as well. So the Norwegians have said that vessels from these two companies, who make up about 45% of the Barents Sea, the Russian portion of the Barents Sea cod quota, so it's a big volume, they can't fish in Norwegian waters. I asked Noribo for comment about this, and I'm writing this story up to publish hopefully tomorrow. The Noribo said in response to this that they feel that Norway could be breaching an agreement on co-managing the fisheries, and that could potentially have implications for the two countries set the quota together. This obviously isn't a decision Noribo makes. It would be a Russian government decision. But if the Russian government, the one way this could evolve is, theoretically, maybe the Russian government decides to ban Norwegian vessels from fishing in their waters. Maybe they decide to unilaterally, set their quotas for cod and haddock for their own waters and not set it in unison with Norway. All of this is theoretical, but these are the questions I posed to Noribo, and they didn't just deny that these are possibilities. They basically said that they feel that it could have a direct impact on the two countries' management of the fishery. I know from speaking to sources in Norway, this is also obviously a concern for sources in Norway because, they've had issues with their MSC certification. All of this could affect that. I mean, the whole thing is a really evolving story. And then obviously in the backdrop of that, there's a steep cut this year. The Barents Sea cod quota was cut 25%. The scientists are recommending it's cut 21% next year, which will take it down to 270,000 metric tons. And if you go back to 2013, I think the quota was 1 million metric tons. So it's basically like, a quarter of what it was, just over 10 years ago. And then obviously you've got the Noribo and Merman portion of that supply coming out of the chain for the EU. It's so hard to kind of see how this all plays out. But I mean, it's not great for the whitefish processing sector, particularly not in Europe, because they're very reliant on that Russian raw material. And two big players are being taken out of the equation, and the quotas are coming down. So that's why the pricing is at record levels and it's kind of staying at record levels. So it's a very interesting scenario all around and difficult for processing sector.
One of the quotes that stood out to me this week was from the Russian embassy in Norway. It says, "We considered the decision of the Norwegian government to impose sanctions on the Russian fishing companies Noribo and Merman Seafood to be absurd and politically motivated." It is, it's always fun when a press release is like, it's absurd. It makes for great podcast material, is what I could say.
Indeed.
So, Tom, before we let you go, you're always on top of these M&As, and we've got two big ones coming out of the woodworks this week. Which one do you want to start with?
Yes. So there was obviously two big deals this week. One broke today in salmon farming, but the one I can maybe say a bit about first is Mark Foods' move for Bristol Seafood, which is a very interesting move from a company which is growing pretty rapidly. I mean, when Mark Foods acquired Arysta a couple of years ago, maybe 2, 3 years back, another big importer, they were saying at the time that I think the company was around $800 million of revenue. Maybe this Bristol deal is taking them close to a billion. And we asked them that, but they're not really willing to say anything more other than what was in the press release. But maybe that will come out when the deal closes. I think they're planning to close the deal in August. So it's been agreed, but it's not been closed. And Mark Foods, their real core business is toothfish or Chilean sea bass, as it's known in the US. So Barry Markman, the founder of the company, got great contacts in that sector globally, bringing toothfish from all around the world. It's a very high-value species. That's kind of the core. But then they've expanded into other sectors, other segments. They acquired, very under the radar deal, but they acquired a big groundfish importing company, Endeavour Seafoods, in 21, which wasn't actually announced until they announced the Arysta deal. And that took them more into groundfish, but more frozen groundfish. And I think speaking to sources around that, the thinking that what the benefit for that is they can cross-sell, Mark Foods can cross-sell Endeavour products through their customer base and vice versa. Both companies have different customer bases, but it sort of got them into groundfish. And then, Bristol is very big in scallops, but it's also very big in groundfish, processing groundfish in Portland, and got a very nice range of, attractive looking value-added products for the retail sector. So yeah, it'll take them into kind of new segment. It seems like they're quite strategically expanding the business and, getting into new segments, new customer bases. And then Peter Handy, the CEO of Bristol, going to stay on and be the COO, I think, of Mark Foods, which is interesting. Peter's very knowledgeable guy in the sector. He came from outside the sector. I think he came from finance, and he's really kind of a relatively rare example of someone that's come into seafood from outside the industry and really like carved out a niche for himself in the sector. And yeah, obviously that, he seems to be then going to play a much bigger role in the larger business. Then the other deal which broke was Cermaq acquiring three of Grieg Seafood's divisions. So big deal in in the salmon sector, close to $1 billion in terms of the enterprise value. Again, that's going to close, that's in October. The main value of that seems to be, from speaking to analysts, really what Cermaq is paying for is the Norwegian bit of the Grieg business. So they're acquiring Grieg's farms in Finnmark, in the north of Norway. Cermaq has operations up there, so there's a lot of synergies between those two operations. And then they're leaving Grieg with operations in Rogaland in Norway, which is, will leave Grieg with about 30,000 tons of production. So there'll still be a reasonable sized Norwegian only salmon player. And then also Cermaq is acquiring Grieg's salmon farms on the west coast of Canada and British Columbia, and on the east coast in Newfoundland and Labrador.
I could throw some numbers in for you there, Tom. The acquisition, so you said it covers three subsidiaries. So if you're looking at Finnmark, they have a production volume of 26,000 metric tons in 2024. Grieg Seafood Canada is operating on Canada's west coast with 12,000 metric tons. And then Newfoundland on the east coast, they produced around 11,000 metric tons, just so to provide our listeners with depth of how much they just acquired.
The interesting thing with the West Coast operation, which is producing 12,000 tons, but in the view of the Oslo-based analysts, it's worthless, as one put it to me, pretty harsh. But that's the way it's seen in the financial community because of the regulatory environment in British Columbia, which has become extremely anti-salmon farming. That is basically nothing of the valuation. And most of the valuation is tied up in the Norwegian operation and then a bit in Newfoundland.
So Undercurrents Masahiko Takayuchi reported that with the acquisition, Cermaq's production is expected to rise to about 280,000 metric tons in fiscal year 2027. That's 1.4 times its output during the fiscal year of 2024, which ended March 2025. So Cermaq CEO Stephen Rafferty said in a statement that this will strengthen our competitiveness and contribute to growth. So link to that full story in the show notes. Thanks, Tom.
Also in line with the theme of growth is news this week that Del Mar Seafoods is expanding to California processing operations with a new facility next to its headquarters in Watsonville, California, which also includes the addition of individual quick freezing capacity. The vertically integrated seafood processor handles more than 30 million pounds of fresh and frozen seafood annually and sells under the Ocean Angel, Third Generation, Royal, and Emerald brands. A longtime processor of California market squid and northern anchovy, Del Mar recently expanded its sourcing to include Atlantic cod and haddock, imported clean calamari, and a line of clean calamari sourced from the U.S. East Coast. Its new facility increases its footprint by 40% and adds liquid nitrogen freezing capacity, which gives it the ability to freeze up to 20 metric tons of IQF product daily. More on this story in the show notes.
So Chef Bobby Flay has declared it hot lobster summer. And I am just 100% on board with that. Lauren, let me tell you, I had the most delicious impulse buy last week. I went in for some clams, left with a half a pound of lobster mac and cheese.
That's what I like to hear.
Exactly. It is hot lobster summer, baby.
So backing Bobby on his hot lobster summer comments is our very own Gary Morrison and Ben Fisher.
Live lobster prices are certainly hot. Undercurrent's most recent wholesale price assessment shows another increase this week for all sizes of live lobster. For some sizes, this is the seventh week in a row where the price has increased. And for some sizes as well, the $10 a pound mark has been crossed this week. So live lobster prices are coming up. This is due to continued short supply from both Canadian storage as well as unimpressive landings from Maine lobstermen. Sources have reported Undercurrent that there have been two boat price hikes in the last week for fishermen in Maine, which one lobster dealer called something of a bidding war. And there's an emerging concern that this is causing something of a bubble to form. These prices are not sustainable for this point in the season, according to one lobster seller. The other thing of note this week is that more shedders or new shell lobsters are showing up in traps as well. And the quality of the shell is such that they are now suitable to ship. So we reported prices for new shell lobsters as well for the first time this season. As you may expect, they're a little bit lower than for hard shell. So if you are looking for a deal, new shell.
Gary, what about on your end?
Yeah, so those live lobster prices that are surging to high levels here has certainly been a tailwind for frozen tails. Now, we saw strength spill over from last week into this week, and we had broader changes on the main prime sizes of 2 to 3 ounce all the way through, 5 to 6 ounce and even the 6 to 7 ounce. But the real story is in frozen processed meat. The industry was already working from a limited inventory position coming into the season, and it's really been the high prices and the robust demand that we've seen that have continued to keep prices elevated. And now the new price levels and the demand for fresh meat. So the demand for fresh meat in Maine from everyone that we're talking about is basically out of this world. It has pushed fresh prices up into the $40 and above range. So that makes it really expensive for people to freeze meat. So they're just really not doing it. The raw material is just too expensive. So there's really no processing going on in Maine right now. And it's really not going on in Canada right now, but that's also because of the time of year that we have. And usually most people in the Gulf take off until the fall. Fishery starts August 11th in LFA 25. So no processing at all for frozen meat. So those that have that limited inventory that we were working with are really protecting it. And they have continually on a weekly basis moved it up once or two times a week, their price, their asking levels, and they're getting it. So this week alone, so week 29, we saw prices move up around 4 to 5% on all meat grades, TCK, CK, CKL, and broken. And the indication is that people quickly raised their prices after this because there just isn't any available inventory or meaningful replacement coming down the line.
You know, I think when it comes to lobster, people just, they don't care. We've talked about this. They're willing to pay. And there's some ridiculous lobster rolls. And Gary, I think you and I are going to have to do a road trip. There's one in Farmingdale, New York. They have a 3 foot long lobster roll for a for a cool $135.
That's actually not too bad.
I was going to say that price isn't too bad.
Because so usually a small hot dog lobster roll around the Jersey Shore here is about $40, $45. Right.
Right.
So we'll take the three of us can take a road trip. Sorry, Ben, you're across the pond. Wait, where are you, Ben?
I'm in Maine. So suitable to be talking about lobster.
So, oh my gosh. We need to come to him.
Okay, never mind. Okay, so we'll on our way up to Maine, we'll stop in Farmingdale, New York for this 3 pounder. All right. And then there's this other one that I found. It's called the Big Kahuna. It's in Massachusetts, North Andover. It's $80. It's a 16-ounce lobster roll.
You won't need to stop for any other snacks on your road trip if you're eating a 3 foot lobster roll.
So I wanted to update you guys on groundfish. There's been a lot of moving parts. Starting with the biggest news out of the Barents Sea, the Norwegian-Russian Research Group has recommended a 21% cut to the 2026 Atlantic cod TAC, bringing that total down to 269,440 metric tons. So that would follow a 25% cut in 2025, already the lowest quota since 1991. Meanwhile, there is more optimistic outlook for haddock. The 2026 recommendation calls for 18% increase to 153,293 metric tons. And that's thanks to a stronger incoming year class from 2021 to 2024. Global pricing reaction there, Barents Sea H&G cod prices remain at record highs, and that's trickling down to US wholesale markets. The Icelandic single cod fillets moved up 10 cents this week to $9.45 on average, while Chinese processed twice frozen cod posted sharper gains. Chaturpuk fillets were up 45 cents a pound, averaging $6.55 a pound. In contrast, Alaskan Pacific cod held steady this week. That said, the price gap between the two, between Pacific and Atlantic cod, has narrowed in recent weeks. And that's reflecting both substitution demand and rising raw material costs on both ends. So haddock, that continues firm as buyers lean into the species as a cod alternative. With that tight cod supply and tariff uncertainty on Chinese seafood expected to escalate in August, haddock's competitive edge could grow. Yellowfin sole out of China has also seen small gains driven by seasonal demand and cautious forward buying. And pollock has also been a bit more steady. We have seen some strength since bee season began early last month, but overall the market on single and twice frozen has shown stability compared to other species. So looking ahead, overall, the US groundfish market remains underpinned by we've got constrained supply and elevated input costs. We've got tariff uncertainty continuing to cloud sourcing decisions, especially around the Chinese processed product. So buyers are increasingly planning cautiously, but it's much more hand-to-mouth orders with substitution and diversification strategies shaping procurement in Q3. So despite these rising prices, product is still moving. We have not yet hit that threshold of buyer pushback. Yet with these conservative buying efforts and potential for supply constraints to continue into next year, given the quota cuts, the industry does anticipate some rough waters towards the end of the year, but we will be keeping a pulse on it all. If you'd like to have free access to our pricing platform to see the latest pricing from source to wholesale, we have a link to our demo form in the show notes that you can fill out and check it out for yourself.
And there's plenty of other great stuff in the show notes, links back to all the articles we talked about, all the good stuff.
So. We've got it all in one place for you.
So check that out. Well, Lauren and I need to start planning our lobster road trip. We'll see you back here next week. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.